This is The Producers with Ryan Dreen, a podcast designed for radio imaging, commercial production, all things audio. Feedback is encouraged at ryanontheradio.com.
Okay, here we go. This would actually be the first anniversary. What the hell's the right phrasing I'm looking for? It's the first anniversary of the show. I interviewed Dave Fox, in fact, exactly a year ago from today, as far as I can remember. It might have been within a couple days. But anyway, a year ago, I started this whole thing off, and I've had about, 14, 15, 16 episodes in the can since then. A lot of great response. I always will say thank you to everybody who writes me nice messages. I'm just trying to facilitate this thing, right? I'm not really doing anything too epic. But John Frost will be the guest, as you saw, and I think that was a really fitting way to celebrate the first year with having a guy I've looked up to forever. Eric Chase would be the other ultimate interview. It's not that he's ever said no. I haven't bothered to reach out to him yet. But now I kind of think maybe I wait till the second year to interview him, but I don't want to wait another year to interview him. So I'll probably do it sooner if he is willing to oblige. I'll just have to reach out. But I've got a whole list of great guests coming up, and a lot of people that have been submitted, voice talent, you know, guys that used to be producers that are now 100% voice. They do 50-50, just big names, and a lot of people are more than willing to come on here and talk. So again, if you've got people you want to hear from, please tell me. But we've got a whole grouping of great people coming up. Another thing to remember, there's always lots of extra content on the show notes little section on the podcast page on ryanontheradio.com. So don't forget to always check there. You can go back in time, too, and just look at some of the stuff that's been submitted. I will post the full Frostbites demo because it's really good production, and it's a good service, by the way. But it's really long, so I'm not going to play the whole thing at the end here. At the end of part two, I'll play some of it. Lots of Frost audio to begin here in moments. I believe I have nothing else of importance to say right now except thank you. And thank you to John Frost. We will hear some of his work now.
John Frost, F-R-O-S-T.
Welcome to the Tuesday night meeting of Facebook poke, Addicts poke, Anonymous. Poke, 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 poke. Please stop. Poke, poke, poke. Please. Poke, poke, guys, poke, 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 do we have any newcomers?
Yeah, hi, I'm Marty. Poke. I haven't checked my wall in 6 hours. Thank you.
I'm Sharon. Poke. I can't do my work because I keep getting tagged.
Poke. Please.
What? I'm Mike. Poke. I don't have a problem with Facebook. No, I can quit whenever I want.
Get real.
Kind of like MySpace better.
Oh, why don't you start a band?
MySpace is a gateway drug.
Triple grande non-fat latte for Bacop.
It's Bob. The key is silent.
That's nice.
That's you!
Allergic to stupid.
You have intrigued us with your chatter.
Yes, do fill us in.
But not in a gay way.
Thanks for taking me to this restaurant. I've always wanted to eat a cheese noose.
She knew.
Cheese noose.
She knew.
Cheese noose.
She knew.
You're dumb. That's why this weekend, we made it easy to win.
Electrobot Supersonic, go!
People tease me at school. They call me Rat Boy because I have a little tail.
I bet you're good at mazes. Here's some new music.
You've had it tough, but you still can't rest. The convenience store's not gonna knock over itself.
Before you make your summer 100 times f***er.
Mr. John Frost.
Hello.
Welcome to the Producers Podcast, the first annual episode, and it's extremely fitting to have you as the guest. I thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, because you've been around a long time, and so have I.
Yeah, you've got me by a little bit. I would never want to age you, though you do kind of look like a member of Entourage. You're loving the L.A. life out there, I think.
I am living the L.A. life as much as I possibly can. I love it here. It's amazing.
I remember I had the Frostbite service a few years ago, but you posted pictures of your new house under the Hollywood sign. You still there?
Yes, I am still there. I'm hanging on by the skin of my teeth trying to make that mortgage, but I love it. It's just like a zen-like paradise. And if I wish I was better at working from home, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Because what, too many distractions?
Yeah, there's internet, and on the internet there's porn, you know. There's I have a dog, I have two cats, it's always sunny, there's usually exotic dancers at the pool. No, it's not true anymore. but there's a lot of distractions, and I hate to admit it, but I work better with a boot in my ass, like a Kevin Weatherly boot or something.
Yeah, right.
Right up my butt. And I always used to hate it and resent it when it was there, but made me do work faster and maybe better. Who knows?
Yeah, I've been thinking, like, personally, I know a lot of people listening, everybody branches out, you know, everybody gets the side work and they get the home studio going, but I don't think I can leave, you know, a main station. I don't know if I could.
I don't live with my baby mama or my daughter, but I see her all the time, but that would be a hell of a distraction here at the house. But I've actually petitioned Premier to see whether I could come back in and find an empty studio there, just because I feel like, you're more connected with everything that's going on at the water cooler and stuff like that.
And just having a staff around you makes you just feel like a real work environment.
Oh, thank you for noticing. Oh, I thought you were talking. Never mind.
I was going to tell you, I've got, I don't know, maybe 10 questions that were sent in from all around the world.
Sure.
For you. And then I've, of course, got my list. But let's just start at the beginning.
That sounds great.
Your parents made the love and you were born. And then what was the very first thing in your life that got you interested in this business and sort of said, all right, this is going to happen?
Well, my parents made the love. I was born soon after I absorbed my conjunctive twin. And that voice has been inside me forever. Giving me ideas. No. What was the first thing that I forgot your question?
No, that's right. Where did it all start? What was like the first sort of gig that made you think, all right, this is going to be my job and my life?
Well, my parents separated. My dad went to Alaska, and I would go up and visit him in the summer, and he did radio. And he was really funny and creative and did little sketches and skits and old-time radio serial type stuff. But the stations didn't do that well because, man, he was a weird programmer. So most of the stations went dark, but I went up to visit, and then I went up to live with my dad at about age 13 and a half. And at 14 and a half, I got in a automated radio station just pressing buttons for minimum wage. That was before my McDonald's job, which came at 16. But I just... my dad warned me not to get into radio because you can't make any money. And so that's the worst thing he could have said to me because I was a passive aggressive, rebellious little a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer, which is so ludicrous if you know me. So I went into radio anyway just to piss him off. And I never even graduated high school. And I've been in radio ever since. And I just freaking love it. Whether it loves me or not, I just freaking love radio.
Yeah, it seems to like you. I would say it seems to love you.
It's an unhealthy like, but yeah.
It is a dysfunctional relationship, isn't it?
Dysfunctional, yeah. It's more of a stalking.
So now you, well, I guess you start up in Alaska. I actually did not know that. I didn't know you started in Alaska.
Yeah, I went from Alaska. Wow. I went from the easy listening station to their AM AC station. It wasn't called AC then. It was, I don't know what it was called. MOR, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Then I went to their CHR. I pretty much spent everything in Alaska, but I ended up at one point being a producer for KWL, which is an active rock station up there. And I had these little local radio awards, and I started winning all the little local radio awards for production because I've never been that good on the air. I'm always better if I could sit back in the back and rethink it and think of a even more obnoxious way of, pissing everyone off. And so I'm just better back there. I'm not an Adam Carolla or a Jimmy Kimmel or, you know, a couple of my other friends who just think so well on their feet. So I got to kind of think it through. But as soon as I started winning all those little radio awards, I sent off a demo just to see if I could get any better from the tutelage of Tom Sandman, who was at WBCN in Boston. This was like 80. What was this? It's like 86 area, something like that. And he really liked it. And then in 87, Infinity bought K-Rock in L.A., and they needed a producer, and they flew me down. And I came down and worked there for, I want to say, 25 or 30 grand a year, which was less than I was making in Alaska. And in Alaska, there's no income tax and no sales tax. So
yeah.
I came down at a hit financially just to get into L.A.
Yeah.
And had no idea what I was in for. Scared crapless. I couldn't, for the first 6 months, I couldn't do a good thing.
That was 87 KROQ. How long were they kind of KROQ before you got there?
KROQ, they've been around a long time. They've been around since the 70s. They were an AM radio station first at 1500, and Shadow Stevens was involved with that and turning an FM signal on as well. It's got a long storied career about KROQ. You don't have enough time.
Okay.
It was fun. A lot of times they didn't really either know how to get ratings or care that much about ratings. I'm not sure which, still to this day. It wasn't that important to get ratings. They were making enough money. And so we got to goof off. And I still remember the DJs got to play whatever record they wanted. They could bring it in from home, whatever, one an hour. That was kind of dope. That was when Art was alive and well in radio.
Tell me about when you were actually at K-Rock and you were there for 13, 14 years and everyone famous in the world was coming through there, the best artists, you know, celebrity. What was just kind of a day like there? Was it just a crazy raging party all the time or was it a lot of work? I mean, what was it like?
When I first got there, it was a crazy raging party all the time. Infinity had not, tightened the screws yet to get us more results oriented. And it literally was a party when I first got there, late 80s. People would wander through. Beck would just show up. Mila Jovovich would just show up. That was more pleasurable than Beck showing up. They would just show up, and they would bring lunch or Twinkies or whatever. It's kind of neat being in the middle of this city just because everybody's, you know, popping by the record company anyway at some point or on some tour. And they did. They would stream in. And I can't remember who my favorites were. I think Mila must have been one
of them. I bet.
Not because of the album.
Right.
It was odd. Sometimes you didn't know people were kidding. Somebody said, this is Dave Gahan of Depeche Mode, you know, and they just introduced some tall British guy. And you weren't sure if they were pulling one over on you because he's just hanging out near the phone bank. You know, it was weird. It was really cool, but it desensitized me to it. And we went to thousands and thousands of concerts. You know, it seemed like hundreds of concerts every year you'd end up at, either backstage or with really good seats, you know, just, and it desensitized you to the whole thing. I would not replace it for anything, though, in my memory.
And I can't believe it. I mean, you were really young when you got there, and that was pretty much what your second real job. And then, bam, it was just like off from there, right? I mean...
Exactly. Gosh. It was a whole different world. That's why I couldn't do it. I couldn't do anything of quality. I was afraid to do anything for 6 months. Just because it just seemed so daunting and overwhelming. And it turns out, and I just heard this recently, and I really agree with it on all levels, that you shouldn't be afraid of LA because LA is nothing but a bunch of big buildings and little people.
Yeah, rest of America.
little people running around being little. We have a pretty sizable self-worth about Southern California. and we relish that.
I was going to talk, let me get to this in a second, but when you were at K-Rock and you said you started for basically making no money, was there a time in which you figured out, wait a minute, you know, I am good at this, you know, and how easy was it to start sort of making a real living and then, you know, make the monster dollars that John Frost makes?
Made, right. I think I just let it take its natural course. I was not very good at representing myself, and okay. I didn't know how to do the agent thing. So I was just happy as hell when they upped it to 65 or whatever it was, and then they upped it to 70 or 80, and, you know, I mean, I spent 13 or 14 years at K-Rock and had kind of hit my ceiling earnings-wise at about 2000 and knew I had to go try to find something else. But I never really represented myself very well. I knew I was dope, but or thought I was. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure I thought I was doper than I really was. But I never really represented myself very well, so I let it take its slow crawl. And I also did things to set it back, like get, you know, arrested, you know, and get into substance abuse rehab and things like that, that may have held me back a bit. I haven't always been my best.
Talk about influences. You mentioned Sandman, but, I mean, as far as like imaging director guys, imaging guys, producers, you know, because people mention you as an influence all the time.
Wow. So, well, I have influences. Tom Sandman was one of them because he would do really creative, inventive stuff that I wasn't accustomed to hearing, at least in Alaska. And maybe there were guys doing stuff just as influential. I just didn't know of them. Mm. You know, you kind of get that bootleg, you know, cassette from time to time, you know, to hear other people doing other things in other states. And Sandman was the one that caught my ear. Also, Dick Orkin, just always growing up.
Oh, yeah.
In radio. He was my dad's hero, and that guy's just flipping funny. And the writing and the timing, it taught me so much about my timing. And but in current producers now, there's a lot of them. I mean, there's Kelly Dougherty. There's, well, Eric Chase should be at the front of every single list. He's just such an audiophile and brilliant with sound. But Jeff Thomas, and I love, and he's in Australia, I believe.
We had him on the interview a while back, yeah.
Or else he has no business speaking with that ridiculous accent, so he better be in Australia.
Yeah, he is.
I've got Kelly Dougherty. Nick Daly's a great one, which is one of Eric Chase's kids.
Yeah.
I hope Nick doesn't hate me saying that, but Will Morgan's awesome. I don't know. I love everybody that tries something new that isn't just a liner, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And as art is systematically sucked out of the radio business, everybody that's able to get away with doing something slightly different, slightly novel and shorter, my hat's off to them.
I heard you. I'm just going to kind of bounce around here because you said something. For someone like me, I work at it's a big station, but it's a country station, and I love hearing the imaging that you know, the stuff that you do. Like you said, just super creative stuff.
Thank you,
Will Morgan. I had Roger Keeler in Denver on recently.
Yeah, he's great,
and I just think he does some really creative stuff. But what if someone like me were to say, well, it's really difficult because I'm in a format like country or mm-hmm. soft AC. You know, do you think there's still room to be really creative in this format?
I'm apparently become an old generation one here, and I never thought that was going to happen, and I was going to still say things like dude. I think there's always room for that, but I think it also depends completely on your radio station and what you're able to do and who your competition is. If there's more than one country signal in the market, you got to differentiate somehow. I mean, radio's mm-hmm. guilty of becoming a bigger iPod, and nobody can play more music than somebody playing completely nothing but music. And so differentiating even from the iPod and other stations and doing it in the a voice acceptable and familiar, and if possible, the actual, you know, a voice very similar to the people listening.
Yeah.
You know, speaking from their point of view about things that they give a crap about, I think that's important. I think just the intangible of making someone feel comfortable when they tune in has to be more than music, because everybody's got the same music.
When you say, doing stuff in the voice of the listener and the way they think and all that, would you say that's something you kind of learned? Because that's something you've done for a long time. Did you kind of learn that, or did you kind of figure that out on your own? And have people sort of followed your lead on that?
I was really lucky because when I learned most of what I was good at, I was in the demo. When I was winning awards at the Active Rock Station in Alaska, then called AOR,
mm-hmm.
I was in the demo. And I was in the demo just barely, 18 to 24, for K-Rock when I was down here, when I started to do good stuff in being fortunate enough to be in a media market that was watched by a lot of the country. And so kind of gaining notoriety, I won't say fame, gaining notoriety with producers and program directors just by being in such a high-profile market. So I happened to be in the demo both times. So I was kind of speaking of me. And it kind of matched, in those situations, it kind of matched the listeners that we were going after anyway. Now it's harder. I am still I'm like the world's oldest Peter Pan, however, and I'm still full on into the video games and not watching MTV because they don't have music. And, you know, I mean, just I try to stay as in touch as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep your eyes open. You got to keep your ears open. And if you're in a radio station type of situation, and you have an 18 to 24 demo, and you're way out of the demo, as I am now, it helps to be working from the station, just in that you can interview the interns. You know what I mean? You can talk mm-hmm. to the interns daily, and what? They think skateboards suck now? You know, I had no idea. I thought they were cool, or just whatever it happens to be
right.
that you can't possibly keep up with, a.k.a. Jonas Brothers.
Right. And you got all the Miley Cyrus albums right. that go along
Miley
with
Cyrus is a girl, so at least I can access her on some level. Yeah. But she makes sense to me on some level. I think she's a girl. Is she a girl?
Talk about writing a little bit. I had this question sent in. Writing that you do and or just simply writing, you know, comedy, mm-hmm. What are some of the techniques you use? Are there tricks, you know, or is it just all in your brain and you're just a freak and so it all comes out? I mean, you know.
There's a lot of freak in there, and that's manifested in my actual, you know, non-radio life as well. And so I've had to go through lots of therapy to rein that in. However, it's pretty safe harbor for thinking stupid, weird, off thoughts, you know? I don't know why. I'll just think of something like, I'll think of the word baby carrots, and I'll go, baby carrots. That's way more acceptable than, you know, early birth carrots or something. You know, you'll just think of something that's a weird, it might be a word, it might be a couple of words that you can juxtapose. It might be, and smarter, more creative people than me have pointed out that as there's no original idea left on this earth, combining two different genres or ideas to make a third one is novel and unique and is usually a really good shortcut, you know, to figuring something out when you have nothing. Facebook Addicts Anonymous I did recently. So I'm, you know, going to my AA meetings, and so I figured I'd throw some other things in there like Facebook.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there's, and so I would just do a sitcom about what a meeting might sound like. And so sometimes combining two different genres or two things that people are familiar with together, and you can come up with something that at least on the surface seems new. As far as writing, sometimes writing flows out of me. Sometimes it's just a couple of words I start with and it explodes. Sometimes it fizzles. Mm.
Would you say out of the stuff you do, because anybody who's had frostbites knows there's just ample amount of great, you know, creative different ideas and, you know, pieces of production, bits, you know, sweeps, everything, you know, on there. But
God bless you. I'm sending you a check or something. I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, I'm telling you. I mean, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, Chase Cuts would be probably the top of my list, and just a barely close second would be Frostbites.
Well, thank you so much.
Because as you say, Chase just knows audio. It's sick.
Oh, absolutely does.
It's sick. But anyway, as I was, what percentage of the stuff you kind of start or do are we not hearing because it didn't work?
That changes, I think. Sometimes I'm better at recognizing that I should drop something. And sometimes I'm not so good at it, and I'll battle it. Hmm. And it never turns out as good as the things that just naturally flow out of me. Like poo. And I don't know. I can't give a percentage.
Like, not that much. I mean, is it?
You know, I don't think there's that much that I can't find a way to use somehow. I mean, I might have a big blown up idea about robots in the future and then decide that I want to tell the whole thing involving robots in the future and how they all get radio in their, you know, HD in their, you know, whatever. But once it starts to not work, I'll boil it down to a stripper robot from the future, you know, and I'll go somewhere else, you know, just groups of words. I have just notepad after notepad in my computer of sentences that I plan to address in some way. And just by browsing through them from time to time, I can link some things together. I can think about it a different way because it was a funny sentence or, you know, was a funny premise. And I've just never been able to figure out a way to make it functional and usable, and
I think I've got a good example of what you're talking about. It's one of my favorite things that you did. It, I think on Face, it's a pretty simple idea. I'm gonna play it now.
Okay.
And now, the skydiving comedian. One has two legs and bleeds profusely. Half of a cat.
Shorter jokes.
Oh. This has been the skydiving comedian.
I don't know, man. When I heard that the first time, I lost my shit.
Yeah, you know what? And it's a curse that I think the longer you live in a career, you start to hear the things that you're horrified by that you did years and years ago. There's, I don't really know what that was other than.
I wanted an excuse to tell really stupid, corny jokes.
Yeah.
So I could have done really stupid, corny joke theater, which I think I did later. I did pun theater. Anyway, yeah, I wanted to tell stupid, corny jokes, but it had to have some
but
novel,
how did you,
unique
I
approach
mean,
to it.
Where'd you get the skydive? You know, why was he skydiving? Why wasn't he skiing? Or you know what I mean? Like, where'd you come up with that connect?
There was no point to him skydiving. At first, I think I was going to have him always hit the ground before he did the punchline, but then I couldn't tell stupid, funny jokes.
Right.
So I think that the point of it... It was no longer relevant that he was a skydiving comedian, except that he was a skydiving comedian, and that's funny on the face of it. Yeah, because I think I was supposed to integrate that he wouldn't ever get the punchline out or completely out,
yeah,
or you know, any time where there's, you know, dismemberment and loud bludgeoning, you know, death sounds. I think that's kind of funny at the end of a joke anyway. So I got lost in the soup with that one. I started with a bouillabaisse, and then I no longer needed the bouillabaisse when I went chowder. And so, but the bouillabaisse was still there.
I can't imagine those any other way, though. I just can't, like...
Right! What, am I going to stand there and tell a stupid joke?
I know.
I mean, I toyed with burp talk theater, but that was started to get disgusting, and I started to, you know, make little mini throw-ups.
Yeah. And then, one time, I just remember he landed on his keys. He's like, oh,
you remember it better than I do.
Oh, I actually haven't played those in forever, but I made you send me the effects. I don't know if you remember, this is years ago.
Wow.
I wanted the, you know, the non, without the comedian, and because right. I loved the effects, dude. It was so real.
Well, what did I make the effects out of? I either went and found, I know there was a flag waving, but that wasn't enough. And I know that, I can't even remember what I did. I had to go and find a bunch of things and combine them. And it may have been that I went and ruffled some sheets.
Yeah.
Yeah, really loud with compression all up the butt. And that is a technical term that you kids should learn.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and then just, I could never seem to get the impact loud and painful enough.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I ever got the mix right on that. And the beauty of me is I just like to move on. So if I don't get the mix exactly right, I'll include mix outs usually. Uh-huh. I don't think I did back then, just so that you can mix it better than me. on your way to Eric Chaseville.
Right, right. Everybody should strive for that.
Right.
Now, I wanted to get a little techie on your ass.
Yeah.
In a little bit.
My girlfriend's done that to me, and it's not as pleasant as it sounds.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, oh, we'll try it out, and we'll see.
And by girlfriend, I mean guy. Anyway.
Okay.
No.
Before I get onto the whole techie part, this will be like a transition. You mentioned the loud impact. You could never get it as loud as you want, but
yeah.
People have asked often, how do you get, not just you, but you know, guys that produce effects, you know, the sound effects, the impacts and whatnot.
Right.
How do you get things to sound so big without it, you know, without the volume just simply being too loud? You know what I mean?
Right. That is tough, and everybody's going to wrestle with that forever. I don't know that there is an actual key. I will run it through two compressors at times in the Pro Tools, and one right after the other, and I may limit with one and bring up the volume of the limited signal with the other. Sometimes I will just bring it up with both. God, it's just a feel, and my feel comes and goes. Mm. Sometimes I have earwax. I have a attention deficit disorder that would literally strangle the life of out of another man. and I don't remember where the sentence is going. So I don't know what the key is on that. It's trial and error. You know, you battle with that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How do you do it? Let's talk about you.
No,
we're talking about me.
No. People don't want to hear that. But what about like the idea of layering? I mean, I've heard layering is very
key. The only times that I ever really feel flattered is when somebody, a Nick Daly or an Eric Chase asks me a question about a production I did. Then I feel like I must have done something right. And then I try to go back and remember what it is that I did right. Nick was like, how do you get the, and this is something that people struggle with a lot. How did that crowd of people all, you know, chanting in unison sound so huge? And people, you know, there's about 100 different ways to do it, short of, you know, just going ahead and doing 100 voice tracks yourself.
Yeah.
And even then, sometimes it just comes out thinner.
Sometimes the more voices you get, you have to bring the volume down, and it thins out instead of thickens.
Hmm.
And Nick asked me that the other day. I felt so honored. You did not want to be around me that day. I was just walking around like I was some kind of badass. God bless you, Nick.
Nick.
God bless Florida.
Nick. Well, yeah, there seems to be quite a bit of talent coming out of like what that FLZ really just right there, right?
That's kind of, yeah. I mean, that kind of happened. K-Rock, Will, and I both came from K-Rock in L.A., where we were doing some novel, unique approach. And unbeknownst to us, there was a whole different novel, unique approach going on in Florida. I don't know if you know anything about Southern California, but we're pretty sure that there's nothing outside of Southern California.
Yeah, I grew up there.
Right. So, oh. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I almost broke my phone. But unbeknownst to us, there was some brilliant stuff going on with a totally different take. You know, we were used to hearing stuff that sounded similar to what we were doing, but not there. They weren't hearing us, so they came up with just some awesome stuff. And you know, it's like certain areas of the country that sometimes get on, just start throwing out great bands, you know, like a Seattle or a Minnesota, sure, or a Austin or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do great stuff there, and I don't know who before Eric, but Eric's been a force.
He's definitely he's on my wish list of guys to be on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. For Christmas, I want Eric.
Are you right? Or else, yeah, I'll just take him. I'll just have him.
Yeah, he's also at Premier Radio Networks with Chase Cutts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hopefully, he will cut me in.
There, the end of part one, real quick, I'm just going to tell you that please check out part two. We do get in some of the more technical stuff right out of the gate, and he has some sage words of advice for up-and-comers in the business, lots of other great frostiness, and his most requested Frostbite bit, we feature that coming up here in part two as well. It's pretty hilarious, actually, and there's apparently been like 6 or 7 episodes or more, I guess. Actually, there's been a bunch of them. But anyway, that's coming up in part two, and more with John Frost, so please go check it out. Thanks.